Blog Talk Radio.
Anyone can whistle, that's what they say. Easy. Anyone can whistle, any old day. Easy. It's all so simple. Relax, let go, let fly. So someone tell me, I can read Greek easy. I can slay a dragon any old week easy. What's wrong is simple. What's natural comes hard. Maybe you could show me how to let go, lower my guard. Learn to be free. Maybe if you whistle, whistle for me.
And that was the master himself, Stephen Sondheim, singing Anyone Can Whistle from the first show he ever wrote the lyrics and music to. Unfortunately, in 1964, it was a flop, but I have to tell a little story about this song. My mother, when I was very young, actually, I was a sophomore in high school, and my mother was a teacher, and she bought me this series of albums, 100 of them on the New World label, and they were for teachers specifically. And they ran the gamut of American music, from indigenous Indian music, American Indian music, all the way to modern classical at the time in the 1970s. And this particular recording was on that album, you know, set of albums. Now, I grew up in a household where basically all you could listen to was Broadway and classical. And I remember, you know, West Side Story, we'd listen to that all the time, but not the original Broadway, because that had the word fuck in it. But my parents would always skip that in G. Officer Krupke. But of course, when they redid it, they left out that word and said Krupp you. But I remember that specifically. But I knew Stephen Sondheim. I knew Sondheim from West Side Story. I knew Sondheim from Gypsy and from A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. We had all those albums. And but I did not know this show. And when I first listened to this song, it absolutely spoke to me. Being a kid with some physical problems and sort of ostracized in a new town, and I really, really embraced this song. And that's when I became a fan of Stephen Sondheim, a true fan, someone who really changed musical theater. I mean, I had listened to all these wonderful musicals when I was growing up, and I love Fiddler on the Roof and My Fair Lady, Oklahoma. And, of course, don't forget that Stephen Sondheim, his mentor, was Oscar Hammerstein. But the one thing that really hit me as I got to know his music throughout the musicals that he did past then was this was a man who didn't really believe in happy endings. He believed in humanity. There was a sense of acceptance to the outsider, which I felt in all his shows. I mean, if you take a look at Company, Bobby basically, you know, though it's not stated, is gay. And I've always felt that that particular musical is about making the decision and how difficult it is to come out. It's an amazing amount of work that he's done and that he's given us over the years. And he's had many collaborators, including, of course, James Lapine and John Wheatman, who we'll get to in a moment, and of course, so many others, Arthur Lorenz, for example. But one of the things that I love about his musicals and his music and his lyrics is they really, really speak to something very personal, not about him, but about the characters. His music always about the characters, what they're feeling, and also that it not only, you know, advanced the plot, but gave you information within those contexts. Now, we were supposed to have Bill Reynolds on the show, but Bill's unable to make it today. He messaged me earlier, but he also picked up some songs. And so this is one from Pacific Overtures, and I'll talk more about this. But what this basically is called Chrysanthemum Tea. The boats have docked outside the bay of Japan, and the shogun is deciding whether or not to let them in and talk to them. And so this is from his servant's point of view, and it's called Chrysanthemum Tea.
It's the day of the rat, my lord. There are 4 days remaining, and I see you're entertaining, but we should have a chat, my lord. To begin, if I may, my lord, I've no wish to remind you, but you'll notice just behind you there are ships in the bay. They've been sitting there all day with a letter to convey, and they haven't gone away, and there's every indication that they're planning to stay, my lord. Have some tea, my lord, some chrysanthemum tea. It's an herb that's superb for disturbances at sea. Is the shogun feeling better? Good, now what about this letter? Is it wise to delay, my lord? With the days disappearing, might we benefit from hearing what the soothsayer say, my lord? Permission, but they sit there all day in contemptuous array with a letter to convey, and they haven't gone away, and there's every indication that they still plan to stay, and you look a little gray, my lord.
have some tea, my lord, some chrysanthemum tea, while we plan, if we can, what our answer ought to be. If the tea the shogun drank will serve to keep the shogun tranquil, I suggest, if I may, my lord, we consult the Confucians, they have mystical solutions, there are none wiser they, my lord.
So Pacific Overtures debuted on Broadway in 1976. It was the first Broadway musical with an all-Asian cast. And much like Kabuki and No Drama, they used both styles of Japanese drama. Most of the cast were men, even in the female roles. with the exception at the end when we were in modern Japan and the song Next. This is also apologies to George Takei and Allegiance, but this was the first musical of an all-Asian cast. It is also what I think is the hidden gem in all of Sondheim's musicals. I think this is a tremendous musical. I listen to it at least once or twice a month, and I love it very much. Now, one of the things we haven't talked about is the different stylisms. If you listen to that particular song, and by the way, Bill picked that particular song. If you listen to that song, you will hear different stylisms within even Japanese music. What we're going to go now is we're going to go to another song from Pacific Overtures. And this is a song where all the ambassadors come to the shogun to ask for things. And you will hear many different stylisms. Also, please listen to the lyrics, because this is where we really need to start focusing on Sondheim's use of words and his rhyme schemes, and that this is a pretty amazing song. Also from Pacific Overtures, this is Please Hello.
We don't foresee that you will be the least bit argumentative, so please ignore the man of war we brought as a preventative.
Please ignore the man of war that anchor rather near the shore. It's nothing but a metaphor that acts as a preventative.
All clear. Just sail. Sign here. Hello, hello. Objection present. President Pierce, say more.
Hello.
Get them ambassador sent. President Pierce, get extra clause.
Wait, please. Hello. Don't forget the latch. Like to keep in touch. Thank you very much. Tell them to go, but pulling up the lip. What so little nip? What with battleship? Hold everything, we're gonna bring chocolate. Wouldn't you like to lick a beautiful little piece of chocolate? Listen, that's not to mention wonderful. Pay attention, windmill. Wouldn't you? There, can you read? Good, we will need two parts. One of them not too rocky. How about Nagasaki? Two parts. One of them for the cocoa. What do you call it? Yokohama. Yoko Nagasaki. Yes, I kiss.
Great Britain with the proposition prepared and it is suitable.
Just
we're not a music being used as ever standing mutable. And though you just a fucking chap and dab of me,
please, hello, comes the monkey wrench. Smell that awful stench, probably the French.
Also, until
if you would get the way we see the fact that it is beautiful.
Nine, of course, my mistake, the czar. Smell the caviar, leave the door ajar.
Also, on
hello, he's bringing Tsar's request. Braving snow with letter to protest. Since we know you're trading with the West, you might at least don't touch the coat. Start looking east or closer west. Well, farther north are we the fourth. I feel depressed. Don't touch the coat. Coming next is extraterritoriality. Noting text, say extraterritoriality. Are you perplexed by extraterritoriality? Just noting clause, don't touch the code. Which say your laws do not apply. Don't touch the code when we drop by. Not getting shot no matter what. A minor scrape, a major rape, and we escape. Don't touch the case, that's what is extraterritoriality. Fair is fair. You wish perhaps to vote. What we care, you're liking what we wrote. Sitting there in the finest fleet afloat, observing boats. Don't touch the coat. Just sign the note.
The British give us latest dealing version of morality.
We want the sand, want the rock and chain. Why you left them game, just the rock and chain.
Alo, please, alo.
Alo, alo, alo.
I bring word from Napoleon III. He had heard what had occurred here from the little bird. Undeterred, we conferred, though we felt that we'd been slurred. And the third thing was deferred, me here to bring the word. Would you like to know the word from Napoleon III?
I fear, well, you see, there's a famine. Could you wait for a year? We'll agree to what you wear, please, and Lord, don't forget that that.
The moment, please, I take that in the sort of thing you'll never see for wear.
Please, and Lord, don't forget that that.
Please, and Lord, don't forget that that.
I think that is a great song, and there are many, many, many reasons for that. One is, have you ever heard a song with the word extraterritoriality? Seriously. I mean, this accentuates Sondheim's beautiful use of language. Also, when I saw this, I was going to college at the time, and we went to New York City every year, the Drama Club. And it was just ending up his run. I was able to get seats, and it was not even half filled, I don't think. And I came out of this show just absolutely blown away. Now, one thing I do have to make clear is that even with all the different accents you hear in the song, these were all Asian actors. Okay, so it's a really interesting way of processing the information when you're in the audience. And it very much goes back to Japanese drama. The other thing that I really like about this song is that each country is specified by the type of music that is behind it. So the American is very, very much American music, you know, Russian, French, Dutch, the English part of it is his real nod to Gilbert and Sullivan. And I think it's just amazing, amazing work. And then another thing I want to bring out about the song is very much, he was the first composer that I really heard, with maybe the exception of Bernstein, but he was to really layer all the voices on top of each other, much like Altman does in a film. And really, really fine work that he does in this song. And I just love this musical. I recommend it to anyone if you've not seen it. There is a couple of YouTube videos of the whole musical, one from the 2000s, and then one from the original Masterpiece Theater, PBS televised concert and play that they did back in the 70s. So I really do recommend it very highly. Now, I think what we're going to go is we're going to go into Sweeney Todd. Sweeney Todd, I have seen both regional theater, semi-professional, and professional opera. I was not able to see this on Broadway with Glenn Carew and Angela Lansbury, or the revival of it on Broadway. But I have seen it several times. Now, I love horror movies, and this comes from the Brian Guignol style of theater, and it brings something completely different to Broadway. It was the first true Broadway horror musical, as far as I'm concerned, with lots of blood, though Stephen Sondheim says it's a comedy. And really what I think it is a melodrama. It's not realistic, but it's still pretty gruesome. And this one is probably the best known song you're going to hear tonight. And what we're going to do is the prelude, and the Ballad of Sweeney Todd from Sweeney Todd. We're going to do that right now. A master class in building tension. The way that it starts with the organ and with these very, very dissonant chords that, you know, just set you off, then the whistle, and then very softly the song begins, and the choir comes in, and it just builds and builds and builds. It is a masterclass in orchestration, in composition, all the way through. And this was this was his biggest hit on Broadway by far. And it was very unusual in terms of the subject matter. Everything. Now, the subject matter there had been films before, even as way back in the 1930s, and perhaps even, not sure of this, in the silent era, about Sweeney Todd. So it's a well-known story, folk tale, whatever you want to call it, okay? And then they decide to do a musical. And he just absolutely just nails this. Now, for me, the song from this particular musical I love is Pretty Women. And that's the one where he has Judge Turpin in the barber chair and he's about ready to kill him, but it just doesn't work out for him. And that is an incredible song. Now, as I said, I saw this in a opera setting, but I do have to give a nod to Tim Burton and to late Alan Rickman, because I think that particular version in the movie of this of Pretty Women is just tremendous. And of course, you have Johanna, you have all these wonderful songs, and of course, Angela Lansbury as Mrs. Lovett. There's nobody better as far as I'm concerned. And of course, Angela Lansbury was in the original Anyone Can Whistle. And she's been used by and was a very good friend and confidant of Sondheim's. And it's a great, great musical, great piece of work of art, of opera. It has, you know, become a film. And it's going to be with us forever and ever and ever. And that's a wonderful thing. So at this point, what we're going to do is we're going to go to the next musical that we have a song from. And that would be Sunday in the Park with George. Now, I got to talk about this particular musical. My sister, who passed away about a year and a half ago, she came to visit me in the 80s in New York City, and I was, you know, a struggling artist and such. And whenever my family visited, they always took me out to a musical. And it was my choice. And to my sister's consternation, I picked Let's Go See Sunday in the Park with George. And we saw it, and I was enraptured. Of course, this is the Mandy Patinkin, Bernadette Peters production of it, the original Broadway. And I remember my sister coming out of that show, looking at me like, and basically saying, "What the hell was that?" And that's exactly what I expected from my sister. Again, my family was very traditional in their taste. And like me, she grew up with Broadway. And, of course, you know, My Fair Lady and all these great Broadway shows that we would listen to. But this was something completely different. Again, you've got a show in two acts. The first act is George Seurat painting Dot. And then the second act is his great grandson dealing with light and doing an installation at the Museum of Modern Art. And it is the whole setup is about what it's to be about an artist, what drives an artist. And though Sondheim never always said that these songs weren't about him, I think this particular musical is definitely, if not about Stephen Sondheim, about Stephen Sondheim being an artist and what it means to be an artist. Because one of the things I've listened to several interviews before the show, and he always talks about the art and expanding the art, going into different directions, going into different stylisms, you know, doing something different. He didn't want to do the same thing over and over again. And that's very true. But the heart of this musical, as much as it is about art, it is about people. It's about particularly your muse. Whoever your muse is, you may not stay together. You may be separated and all that. And Bill, who was supposed to be with us today, picked this particular song from Sunday in the Park with George. And that would be We Do Not Belong Together. This is sung by Mandy Patinkin, in particular Bernadette Peters. So we're going to listen to this right now.
Yes, George, run to your work. Hide behind your painting. I've come to tell you I'm leaving because I thought you might care to know. Foolish of me, because you care about nothing.
I care about many things.
Things. Not people.
People, too. I cannot divide my feelings up as neatly as you. And I am not hiding behind my canvas. I am living in it.
But you care for it yourself.
I care for this painting. You will be in this painting.
I have something you can use.
I have thought you would
be. Because I understand that I left that.
And there's nothing I can say in there.
Yes, George, there is. You could tell me not to go. Say it to me. Tell me not to go. That you're bored, anything, but don't assume I know. Tell me what you feel.
What I feel? You know exactly how I feel. Why do you insist you must hear the words when you know I cannot give you words? Not the ones you need.
Wonderful song. Wonderful song. The emotion that comes out of Bernadette Peters in that song. Well, the emotion in both. But my Lord, just an incredible piece of music. And thank you, Bill, for choosing that particular song. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about this musical was basically what I call a gobsmack. Because I'm in the audience, Broadway, and the play opens up, and you see the painting in front of you with basically cardboard figures, with the exception of Bernadette Peters as Dot, the main female character in the painting, and George painting off to the side. And she sings this song. And you also heard a bit of this in Pacific Overtures, but there's a particular passage in this song, in Sunday in the Park with George, where She's singing 16th notes to about this tempo. 1, 2, 3, 4. So it's da 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 da. They're words. Okay? And she does it for 16 beats without a breath. Okay? That's unreal. I remember seeing that and my mouth hit the floor. You know, Bernadette Peters, maybe not the greatest Broadway voice ever, but the emotion that comes out of her, everything in this musical, she's perfect for this role. And I have heard other people sing this role, and they're very, very good, maybe a little better in terms of voice and style. But Bernadette Peters has the emotion that nobody has in this role. And I am just blessed to have seen her in Mandy Patinkin. And just to let you know, also Brent Spiner, who played Data, is also in the Broadway show. He played the one soldier, not the cutout soldier, but the real live soldier. And I saw Brent Spiner in this too. So now we go to 1991, and I'm living in Bradford, Pennsylvania. And I still have many friends in New York. And I make a special trip in 1991 to visit because I want to see a particular play. Now, this particular play was not on Broadway. It was off Broadway, Playwrights Horizons. And I went and saw Assassins. And at this particular staging at Playwrights Horizons, at the end of the show, all of the main characters, the main assassins, point their guns at the audience and shoot. And there were certain people who were heels, who had blood packs on them, that were shot. I was about 4 seats away from one of them. It's like, whoa. I mean, it was really something. And Assassins is another John Weidman book. And personally, he's my favorite collaborator with Sondheim. Just a tremendous, tremendous play. And as dark as the subject matter is, it's actually rather amusing. It has a lot of funny parts to it, particularly the actress who played Squeaky Throne was just amazing. But I was very, very lucky to see Victor Garber in the main role of Booth. Now, there are two main roles. There's also the balladeer, who this particular song that we're going to listen to is between the balladeer and Booth. And it is called The Ballad of Booth. And this is the last original song we're going to be listening to tonight. And this is from Assassin. And this is The Ballad of Booth.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln.
Johnny, nobody agrees. You who had everything, what What made you bring a nation to its knees? Some say it was your voice that gone, some say it was booze. Some say you killed a country John because of bad reviews. Johnny lived with a grace and glitter, kinda like the lives he lived on stage. Died in a barn in pain and bitter, 27 years of age. Why did you do it, Johnny? Throw it all away. Why did you do it, boy? Not just destroy the pride and joy of Illinois, but all the USA. Your brother made you jealous, John. You couldn't fill his shoes. Was that the reason? Tell us, John, along with bad reviews.
They're coming. They'll be here any minute.
I need your help. I've got to write this. I can't hold the pen.
Johnny, they found us. We got to get out of here.
Not till I finish this.
Johnny!
No! Have you seen these papers? Do you know what they're calling me? A common cutthroat. A hired assassin. This one says I'm mad.
Oh, we must have been mad to think we could kill a president and get away with it.
We did get away with it. He was a bloody tyrant and we brought him down. And I will not have history think I did it for a bag of gold or in some kind of rabid fit.
Johnny, we have to go.
No! I'll have to make my case. I need you to take it down.
We don't have time.
Take it down. An indictment of the former president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, who is herein charged with the following high crimes and misdemeanors.
They say your ship was sinking, John.
One, that you did ruthlessly provoke a war between the states, which cost some 600,000 of my countrymen their lives. Two,
you started missing cues.
Two, that you did silence your critics in the North by hurling them into prison without benefit of charge or trial. Three.
They say it wasn't Lincoln, John.
Shut up.
Three. He merely had a slew of bad reviews.
I said shut up. History rob me of its meaning. Pass on the truth. You're the only one who can. Please.
He said, damn you, Lincoln, you had your way.
Therefore,
with blood you drew out of blue and gray.
Therefore, tell the children, listen.
He said, damn you, Lincoln, and damn the day you threw the you out of U.S.
Hunt me down, smear my name, say I did it for fame. What I did was kill the man who killed my country. Now the South land will mend, now this bloody war can end. Because someone slew the tyrant, just as Brutus slew the tyrant.
He said, damn you, Lincoln, you righteous whore.
Tell him what he did.
Turn your spite into civil war.
Tell them the truth
and more.
Tell them
how it happened.
How the end doesn't mean that it's over. How surrender is not the end. Tell them how the country is not what it was. Where there's blood in the clothes. I did well, and I did it for my country. Let them cry, dirty traitor, they will understand it later. The country is not what it was.
Johnny Booth was a headstrong fella. Even he believed the things he said. Some called him noble, some said yellow. What he was is off his head. How could you do it, Johnny? Calling it a cause. You left a legacy of butchery and treason we took eagerly and thought you'd get applause. But traitors just get jeers and boos, not visits to their graves. While Lincoln, who got mixed reviews, because of you, John, now gets only rage. Damn you, Johnny, you paved the way for other madmen to make us pay. Lots of madmen have had their say, but only for a day. Stories, hear it in the songs. Angry men don't write the rules and guns don't right the wrongs. Hurts a while, but soon the country's back where it belongs. And that's the truth.
So listen to the instrumentation of that song. You have the banjo, you have the guitar, you have the harmonica, which all represent the time of Booth. You also have some horns in there. But as you go through the musical, the orchestration changes. There's a particular song with Squeaky Fromm and Sarah, I can't think of the character of the person's name, but they're talking, and that whole song has a whole different instrumentation. There's just so much in this musical, and one of the things I really like about John Wiegand, who wrote the books for Pacific Overtures, and this particular, and I think he also did Passion, is that it really brought out the cynicism of Stephen Sondheim in the lyrics and what he says in that. I should have probably mentioned that there was a trigger in that song with the N-word, but it's appropriate considering that it's spoken by Booth. It is a very, very dark musical, but as I said before, there are great moments of comedy. There's just some wonderful, wonderful acting. And I do have to, again, give a nod to Victor Garber. If you do not know the name, he sang Booth in that song. He was also Jesus in both Broadway version of Godspell and also the film version. He's a wonderful actor. He's been in several films, but he's primarily a stage actor and singer. And he is wonderful in this, and just playing Jesus and John Wilkes Booth in the same trajectory as an actor over the years, That's some range, let me tell you. So at this point, we're probably going to call this a podcast. But before we do, I do want to just say that for me, Stephen Sondheim was very special. And if you've seen that, I've gravitated toward the lesser known musicals. I think those are the ones that you need to really look at. I also should mention Allegro, which was something that he worked on with Oscar Hammerstein and Richard Rodgers, which at that time, which was 1947, it was very, very unusual musical. And Sondheim has said over the years that most of his composition and everything that he's done for the musical theater is sort of like he's trying to fix that particular musical and trying to take that musical and make it right through what he's done. And I think over the years, he certainly has done that in terms of bringing theater into something completely different than what it was in the mid-century of the mid-20th century. And though at this point, it looks like Broadway has turned away to a certain degree of Sondheim. He was working on a new project before he died, which we'll probably never see the light of day. His last musical that was produced on Broadway, which I did not see, unfortunately, was Passion. Do know the music. It's a wonderful, wonderful musical. Again, a very, very cynical and dark piece. But the funny thing about that is if you look at the interviews, if you hear him speak, he was gregarious, he was full of life, and he was a lot different in real life and in his viewpoints and the way that he spoke than what his musicals might, you know, suspect you to believe. And one of the other things about Sondheim that we need to talk about just very briefly is his wordplay and his puzzle fixation. He was a great puzzle person. And one of the things he used to do was he would partner with his good friend, Anthony Perkins, and they would play these murder mystery games on I think Perkins' yacht, or it might have been Sondheim's yacht, but they would do this and have these murder mysteries and that. And the reason I bring that up is tomorrow on Deviant Legion, we are going to have a watch, commentary watch, of The Last of Sheila, which is a film that Anthony Perkins and Stephen Sondheim co-wrote the script. Stars James Coburn, Richard Benjamin, Diane Cannon, Paul Prentice, Ian McShane, and many others that I'm forgetting at this point. But James Mason. I can't forget James Mason. But it's a wonderful, wonderful murder mystery. And in many ways, I think it is the predecessor and sort of the mentor to the very good Knives Out, which came out a couple of years ago. Because I watched Knives Out about 6 months ago for the first time. And all I could think about was The Last of Sheila. We're going to be doing that tomorrow, and Rachel will be joining me for that. On Friday, Adam is going to be doing a show on the seminal HBO film from 1993, and the band played on, which is about the medical conundrums that the NIH had during the AIDS crisis. And the infighting and all the difficulties that they had during that time. And I'll be joining him for that. And then right now, as far as next week is concerned, I can tell you that next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, we are going to be doing a watch, and we're going to be doing a Christmas watch of the dark comedy The Ref with Dennis Leary, Glennis Johns, Kevin Spacey, and Judy Davis. And I watch that film every Christmas time, so we're going to have an absolute blast with that. Rachel and I'll be on with that. I know Tuesday we don't have set yet, a week from today, but I'll be sure to have that set up by Friday. At this point, I want to thank everyone for listening. Phil, I hope everything is all right and you're doing well. And we'll talk to you soon. And that'll be interesting. We're not doing that song. What we're going to do is we're going to end up again with Stephen Sondheim singing Anyone Can Whistle. And again, thank you very, very much for listening. And here it is.
Anyone can whistle, that's what they say, easy. Anyone can whistle, any old day, easy. It's all so simple, relax, let go, let fly. So someone tell me, dance a tango, I can read Greek, easy. I can slay a dragon, any old week, easy. What's wrong is simple, what's natural comes hard. Maybe you could show me how to let go. Lower my guard, learn to be free. Maybe if you whistle, whistle for me.
Good night, everyone.